Hey, thanks for tuning in to another episode of the How to Become an Elite Financial Advisor podcast. I wanted to extend a personal invitation. If you had questions about coming to our How to Charge Live event in April of 2025, that you would go to howtocharge.live.com. That's howtocharge.live.com. Click on a button there that says schedule the call. And I'd love to answer any questions you have about coming to our event in April. It will sell out, but if you have questions, I want to answer them as quickly as possible so you can get your seat to that event. I look forward to seeing you here with us in April. And now, enjoy today's episode.
Everybody, welcome to the podcast. Sven Morgan here with Derek. And I love Derek's story. He's going to unpack it for us. We have a lot of different people on the podcast. We have yet to have an advisor that has been where all of us are, had all the frustrations we've had, solved a lot of them, built a great business, and then chose, for some reason, we all may think he's crazy, to restart in another world while still helping advisors and blazing a new trail. So, Derek, thanks for being here, brother.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me, Stan. I'm looking forward to this.
All right. So give us some background on when you kind of went crazy and decided to quit your thriving practice.
And I was sober. A lot of people ask, Derek, had you been drinking heavily? No, I was sober. So I go away on a sabbatical every year. I take about 5 days completely by myself to think and pray and journal and really just get a handle on what are the goals I've got and what's a strategy for me to get there. I run fast. I'm going to run fast 52 weeks of the year. I want to take at least 1 week to figure out, okay, what am I running fast toward? So I was in Boston at the time. This was July of 2019. And I've got time by myself, and I feel like I should write a list of things that I would enjoy doing. So I begin to write on the list, and I wrote, write a book, launch a podcast, coach, speak, consult. And shockingly, I realized what wasn't on the list was being a financial advisor. And it wasn't that I didn't enjoy being a financial advisor. I loved my clients. I loved my team. But I realized, if I'm being honest with myself, I wasn't enjoying it as much the past couple of years. I was showing up and doing a good job, but I felt like there was more in the tank. And so I realized at that point, it was time to sell. And it's funny because I was actually, I took a pencil and I drew a circle around Arlington, Texas, where I live. And I had bought four other practices over the past 10 years. And this hour and a half radius that I could fly was very manageable. And so Nashville, as we were just talking about off the air, I was looking to buy some places in Nashville. And there was a wholesaler I met, and he was going to introduce me to some advisors I wanted to sell. And one day out of the blue, Sten, he completely stunned me when he asked. He said, Derek, you're over 50 years old now. Most people are wanting to downsize, and you're wanting to add more stress to your life. Why do you want to do that? And at first, I was kind of offended that he asked the question. I'm like, dude, just introduce me to people and let me kind of live my own life. But that's the question that guided me to ask, perhaps is this the time to go bigger and bolder? And as I call, go Derek 2.0. And that's what I chose to do.
Wow, that's great. For all the advisors listening, we are not advocating you to sell your practice tomorrow. because when I hear you talk about it, it was a journey. I think it was. A great season of your life where you're like, I know who I am. I'm pouring fully into it. And that was working. I do think there's something healthy about the sabbatical piece. I think for all the advisors leaving, if we run hard this many weeks of the year, does it only make sense to pause and kind of evaluate what we're doing?
Right.
And I find, and I was guilty of this, is that our natural tendency is to hold tight to what we know and to just stay busy. And so how do we break that up? And so over the years, was it always 5 days, or when did you kind of start challenging yourself to pause?
Yeah, I began this about 10 years ago, and I realized I like to always be doing stuff, and I like to have multiple projects at one time. I'm a marketing guy at heart. I love marketing. And my philosophy was always that I wasn't just a financial planning business. Really, I was a marketing company who did financial planning. And my philosophy was that way because I always was in the marketing business of how do I attract and retain high net worth clients. And I saw it was not always the smartest advisors or the people that knew the tax code the best and knew how to state ERISA laws the best, that just had this line of people. It was people who could market themselves as, here's the problem I own, and how can I relate that to higher net worth clients so that they know, hey, here's somebody who empathizes with my situation, who understands me, and then they're willing to pay higher fees, and it's a much stickier relationship. And so to do that, I realized I needed to be very strategic with my time. And so part of it was identifying what in my role was I going to be great at, and what was I going to just be good at? And taking those 5 days to really do a deep dive, almost hiring myself as this external consultant to look in my practice and say, to get to where I want to go, we all have the same amount of time, but some people seem to use their time better than others. I mean, you know these people, Sten. You're a great consultant and you see the advisors that really have it together. And I realized to get what I wanted, I needed to be strategic. And so basically, and this is not my original idea, but it's a concept I've adopted. And that was, I came up with a stop doing list. So many people will tell you, you know, if you want to reach your full potential, you've got to do this and do this and do this and do this. And before long, you've got this long list of to-do things and you didn't have any extra time in the first place, right? And so what I realized was I need to focus on maybe three core things that will drive my business and then stop doing the rest. They all may be good things, but have other people, if I can hire them out for less dollar per hour than the benefit I'm getting, it just made good economic sense. So part of that sabbatical was not just me setting goals about personally and how to be a better dad and a better husband and a better father and so forth, but also if I wanted to retain my energy, I like to call myself the CEO, which is the chief energy officer of my business. Because if I see clients and now the advisors I work with every quarter, or if I, you know, meet with them and have calls twice a month, if they think I'm down or I'm not doing well and not bringing the energy, they're going to doubt, because people purchase passion. They pay for confidence. If they don't detect that, they're not going to want to stay with me for a long amount of time. And that goes with clients as well.
Yeah. Love that. I'm taking notes as you talk too.
You bet. You bet.
So the marketing side of it, I think that is I know a lot of great advisors that have not stayed in the business because they couldn't get enough clients.
Yeah.
By every definition, you know, of the word. They're the brain surgeon that's amazing, that for somehow, you know, if we could all choose, they would be the one we'd want. Nobody knows about them though.
Right.
But I've come to know it's like that's just part of our business. Like you can sit around being frustrated at it and spend all your time reading and becoming this valuable product to people. But if nobody knows about you, what was it really for? So before I want to jump into the book you wrote and talk about some other things, but with your marketing bent, and I've met some of the most fun, creative, successful advisors I meet have this marketing bent to them. And it's not mine. I wasn't the marketing person necessarily. I've kind of had to like get the who's around me to give me that expertise.
Gotcha.
But you could share with us some things you've learned as you've done that. For the advisors listening, they're maybe frustrated with marketing. They have an amazing product they need to get in front of clients, which is themselves. What's some advice you'd give them?
Well, two things. You know, I think back to when I first got into this business, there was the airline pilot, the weatherman, the CEO. They all left their businesses to become a financial advisor. And I felt about this small compared to them. But somebody gave me the advice of just, Derek, learn to embrace and actually like rejection, because it's on the path to success, and make the phone your friend. If you can do those two things, you'll be fine. And before I know it, all those people who I thought on the outside looked vastly smarter than me, they washed out. And here was Derek still plodding along and making my way. Yep. So then I had a realization a couple of years ago, and I think some of your advisors may have the same fear, that when you're in a social setting, let's say you're at the Rotary Club or you're at the cocktail hour after the investment meeting, and somebody says to you, hey, what do you do for a living? And then you're stuck. And what I used to say was, well, I'm a financial advisor. And you could see people's eyes roll back in their head. They would literally fall asleep right in front of me, or they would run for the exit. And I realized there had to be a better way. And so what I began to work on, I call it the three-step memorable formula. And that was, saying to someone, so for example, Sten, if you say to me, hey, Derek, so what do you do for a living? We've not met before. And I say, well, you know, Sten, how many people worry about running out of money in retirement. I'm kind of nodding my head as I say that. Well, through our proven three-step framework, we help craft a customized financial game plan, and it takes away the worry in retirement. Now, okay, so what do you do? And what the whole goal there is, someone then says, so tell me more. Well, you know, I was with a client recently. They were worried about running out of money, and the strategy we put in place gave them the peace of mind they needed to not worry about that. And they could live the life and chase their grandkids and feel the sand between their toes that they've always wanted. Oh, yeah. Well, and so the whole point of that is I've never said the words, I'm a financial advisor. What I did is I connected to that prospect with what I call a relatable problem. You want to state something that person will immediately recognize as a pain point, if not in their life, in someone they know life. And so, you know, for example, let's say that in that same social setting, you're going around the room and saying, hey, what do you do for a living? And you meet someone who says, well, I'm a personal trainer. And the person says, well, what do you do? And the person says to you, well, I help people come up with a workout plan and eat better so that they can, you know, live a good life. Okay, great. Well, then later on that evening, you meet another person and they tell you they're a personal trainer. And she says, well, you know how busy executives and business owners, they give everything to their business, but they want to spend time with their kids and have the life they want. And they want to be the cool grandparent to chase their grandkid on the floor. That's what I help my clients do, is live the life they've always wanted and be in the best shape of their lives. So All things being equal, you go home that night and your wife says, well, did you meet anybody interesting? Of the two personal trainers, Sten, who would you be more likely to remember if not called if you needed one?
Yeah, the one that told me a story, the one that I can connect with.
Yeah, the one that told you a story. And the beauty of that is every day we have opportunities to tell our story. I mean, my belief is that being a financial advisor is one of the hardest jobs that's out there, but it's also the most noble profession in the entire world, more than a doctor, more than a CPA, more than an attorney. I mean, we help people actually live lives and pay for them and have a legacy. Yeah. And so if advisors can get comfortable with what is the problem that they can own, because I believe if you own a problem, you own your success. If you own a problem, you own your success. If you want to rent your success, well, then you're selling based on the product and services, features and benefits. Here's my annuity. Here's this or that. And ultimately, as clients, we're sort of trained to pay the least amount of money. So unbeknownst to us, they're going to base the decision on what advisor charges me the least. Yeah. And we know that's typically not the best advisor. But if the advisor can connect with the high net worth prospect and say, I understand the problem you have. Matter of fact, I specialize in helping you solve that problem. Price becomes irrelevant. Yeah. Higher fees. And I like this joke, lower fees, no me. You know, no fee, no me. And ultimately, when you go, let's say you were to have a specialist, you know, an issue with your shoulder or your knee, would you want to go to the specialist that only did shoulders, or would you want to go to the general practitioner? And I just believe advisors who position themselves as that go-to person, they're going to make more money, but also they're going to feel good that they're getting paid for what they deserve and what they're worth.
Yeah, we spent a lot of time on that. I think that was some head trash.
I know that you do. Yeah.
The product was the value. I am simply a means to getting the product connected to the person.
Yeah.
And some of that was just because I had not yet leveled up enough to truly, when somebody asked me, what do you do, to have a great answer. I probably could have made one up, but I might not have presented it very confidently because it wasn't true yet. And so crafting your language is really important, but also being aware enough of yourself to say, when I communicate this, is it authentic? And I've experienced, and some of this is just time. You know, there's 24-year-old Sten advisor that just wanted all these things. He wanted more referrals than he could handle. He wanted all this stuff. And some of it does take time, but I think the lie at times in our business is it's going to take 15 plus years. So just hang in there.
Right.
And I'm not going to tell anybody you can do it in 1 year. Like, this stuff is not easy. It's hard, but maybe three. Like, there is a shorter, harder path if you really want it. than this long, man, if you just survive everybody out, someday you're going to make enough money. I know when I was an advisor, that just wasn't that inspiring.
Man, I completely agree. And, you know, if you don't mind, let me give your advisors a simple exercise. You know, let's ask yourself just on a sheet of paper as you listen to this great podcast, of the most recent five clients that you brought in, what was the problem that they came to you to solve? Am I worried about retirement? I'm worried about if I die, will my spouse have enough money? I'm worried about giving too much money to my kids in the trust. Whatever the problem was, just write that down. And then look at your top five most profitable clients, the ones that pay you the highest fees, the ones that basically are voting with their dollars for you and saying, you're worth me paying a lot of money because of the value that you provide. Ask yourself, what problems did they come in to help you solve? And what you're going to find is when you can merge those two lists together, that's your marketing focus group telling you with a big megaphone, here are the problems that the advisors that you have in your practice and you yourself, these are the types of clients you attract right now. Now, you may not like it. You may be surprised by it, but that's the reality of this is who we're attracting right now. And the way to grow a business, I believe, is just to make it simple and say, wow, if my highest, most profitable clients want me to solve this problem, I'm just going to make it easy. I'm just going to solve more of that problem. And then the key is that becomes the basis for your entire marketing plan. And when you talk, when people ask you, what do you do for a living? Then you can say, well, you know how people worry about insert problem that my highest net worth clients have. And then you're going to start attracting more and more of those people because it's just going to be easier because you're going to work with those people day in and day out.
Yeah, I love that idea. For everybody listening, kind of try to be aware of any head trash coming in, limiting beliefs. I know younger Sten would have been like, Derek, man, but I'm going to miss out on that rollover. Like if I'm too specific with my script, I'm going to exclude a potential person. And what I've realized over time is this imaginary person that I made up that was just waiting to do business with me and waiting for me to use the wrong words to exclude themselves really doesn't exist. Like that's a yes. Something we're making up, that there are way more people that are ready to do business with you that just don't quite understand what you do yet, that living in that space will have a better outcome. And so as you hear Derek talk, and we're going to dive into his book here now, I always want to challenge myself and the listeners to be really aware of anything triggering in you. If anything Derek says makes you frustrated, if your initial instinct is like, man, he doesn't know what he's talking about. He does. He's a fellow advisor. Grab hold of that thought, because that's a good trigger of like, that's probably something I need to spend a little time on.
I like what you said about head trash. It's interesting and it never goes away. You know, some people buy the lie that, you know, once I'm a seasoned advisor and once I've got the seven figures, well, I'll be fine. There'll be other issues of different versions of head trash that try to knock on your door. So I really like what you said there.
I heard this, I can't reference the podcast, can't remember which one, but it was somebody asked, what do you think was the most pivotal advancement in human health in the last 200 years? And they paused, and it was trash removal.
Wow. Interesting.
The ability to take trash away from where people were living and move it out, the disease reduction, all the things like that in and of itself was one of the greatest advancements in human health in history. And as far as kind of like mental health, I know for me, I can almost everything that stops me from doing something hard to exclude myself from hanging out with people that make me uncomfortable because I feel like they're just way beyond me. All of that stuff just came back to, you know, head trash and limiting beliefs. So I use that word a lot.
Well, and I think it's also what I often will do is just say the word cancel. Mm-hmm. You know, when my brain goes to a place of negativity and when I'm, you know, when I had my practice, I was sitting in front of someone who was clearly economically, experience-wise, they would have become one of my top clients. The voice inside says, Derek, you're not worthy. You're not able to do this. You don't deserve this. And it's like, nope, cancel. And really, the words and mannerisms and confidence that I exuded in that room are what caused that client to say, I will work with you. Yep. Because what I found is, and I don't want to sound overly simplistic, Sten, so please forgive me if I do, but what I realized was the game is acquiring the high net worth client with the least amount of words and the least amount of overcompensating with big words. Okay. Yep. The goal is just simply connect and connect on a relatable problem and have them feel seen, heard, valued, and they know you, like you, trust you. And then boom, now we're a client. Then if there's questions they've got that stump you, I can always pay. I can always find someone to help me become smarter when I need to be smarter to help them add more value. Because ultimately, they're paying for the relationship and the trust. They're not paying for the IRS workbook.
Good point. Yeah, I think it's the your confidence in yourself to solve problems is really what they're buying. And yes. So the quicker we can develop that, it does kind of overflow in every setting we're in.
So true. So true.
All right. So one of your goals at one point, you said, I want to write a book.
Yeah.
And I've been through the process. It is not
yes.
easy. There's days where you're like, what am I doing? I shouldn't do this. So there's so much to it. I would never talk anybody out of it. I would probably never tell them what they're about to get into because they may not do it. But everybody that's gone through it, they've learned a lot about themselves, the process. But I love books because I know for each one I've written, it's about 18 months of my time, effort, research, compacted down into something that somebody else could read in a few days.
Yes.
That's why we all need to be reading 10 books a month if we can or if we have the time. So kind of unpack for us your book, where the idea came from, and then what's the impact of it been?
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I realized in working with my clients, I would begin to hear this voice and culture say that money is bad. And I began to pull back and just assess, why would someone say that money is bad? And what they were connecting to two is a couple things. First of all, if I have more money than them, I'm bad. And it's really just because they're jealous of me because I'm more successful than them. But also I began to hear in culture this villainization of executives that made a lot of money. For example, Jeff Bezos of Amazon was the poster child of he's the villain. He's what's wrong with the world. Well, what I would tell people is, I don't know Jeff personally, but he's come up with a model that helps a whole lot of people. And during COVID, I said, you know what? Here is, if you want to really get back in Amazon, do this. They would kind of lean in. What do we need to do? Go buy Amazon stock right now. Just buy Amazon stock. Then you can criticize Jeff Bezos while you're making money because his stock's going to go up because he's adding value to the world right now when nobody else can deliver stuff. And they were like, oh. And I said, let me give you one more unsolicited piece of advice. Learn from what Jeff Bezos has done to be successful. We all have limited brain cells, and we all have a finite amount of breaths we're going to breathe our entire life. We can choose to waste our energy throwing stones at people who make a lot of money, or I can go to the bookstore and buy a book, and I can learn how to make more money. Which do you think, Mr. and Mrs. So-and-so, is a better use of your time? And yeah. I think I'll go buy the book, Derek. Yeah. And so the whole point of the book was to debunk this belief that money is bad. And what I uncovered as I did my research and dug into this is there's a lot of people right now in their 40s, 50s, and 60s who growing up had well-meaning parents and grandparents who would tell them, you know, son or daughter, in life, there's the haves and the have-nots. And we just happen to be part of the have-not family. And so there's always going to be a limit to our success. And God bless them. Those kids grow up believing that regardless of what they do, there's only going to be this lid on them. Or they might have seen a parent bang their fist on the kitchen table and say, if only we had more money, then we could have more fun. And money became the enemy. And I'll tell you a quick story. I had a woman in my office a couple years back, and on the outside, she had it all together, Sten. She was a hard-charging female executive, well-respected, but she would never take my investment advice, which really bothered me. But she also always complained about never getting the raise that she deserved. And so in one of our conversations, we began to unpack this, and she told me a story about when she was a girl, her father had gone to a store to buy some school clothes for she and her sister, and he accidentally bounced a check. And the store owner called her dad and said, you bounced a check. I know you did it on purpose. I'm going to send the cops over to your house to arrest you. Well, this woman at the time, who was a girl, overheard the conversation. Mm-hmm. And she grew up believing that if I make a financial mistake, they're going to send me to jail. And so once we unpacked that and kind of chiseled away this bad belief system, as you talked about, she got a raise within 6 months, got promoted, most importantly, began to take my advice as she started making more money. But it taught me that sometimes how people look on the outside is vastly different than what's going on up in their head. And it's in that head that those limiting beliefs, and it's not just a belief. I think people think about it just a belief. It's just this ethereal word. It's actually holding you back from the life and the money and the relationships and the impact that you want and can have. And that is just not right.
Yeah, what I appreciate about that, and my story has a lot of that family where it's like nobody makes money, you know, and you are a product of your surroundings until hopefully you have enough awareness to break out of that.
Right.
So much of what you just said is in our control. So it doesn't mean it's easy, but all that stuff is in our control. And at times it's the lack of awareness. It's how do we just listen to podcasts, meet people like Derek, as we get information put in isolation, we can feel safe. We hold true to what's comfortable. But when we start letting external input come in and accountability, it's hard to stay the same.
Oh, so true. Well said.
So before we wrap up, I know you talked to a lot of entrepreneurs, business owners, and your audience has grown since you sold your practice. But as a fellow advisor, having run the race, you know, that a lot of us are in and eventually someday saying, okay, well, this race will end. Other doors will probably open. What am I going to go to next? What, as you reflect on that, what's your advice, feedback, encouragement to the advisors listening?
Yeah, you know, I think back when I was the president of our local Rotary Club about 10 years ago, an older gentleman whispered some words in my ear that really had an impact. And he said, Derek, remember that people like imperfect people better. People like imperfect people better. And he could tell I was trying to impress people. I was trying to be this perfect financial advisor, had to look a certain way, talk a certain way. And when he said that, Sten, it was just like this giant exhale of like, oh, really? People just want me to be me. Mm-hmm. And that's what I would tell your listeners is all of you are smart. All of you are capable. All of you are changing people's lives. I mean, you single-handedly are improving people's lives for the better. And rarely can people say that. I just want to encourage people to just be you. Ultimately, people purchase you. People like unique personalities. They like people who are different. They like people who are not the cookie cutter. And so be you, whatever your style is and your brand and your personal memorability, go long into that because ultimately that's what people want. That's what makes you easily referable. Plus, you're going to live a much better life just being you, and you're going to get paid more because you feel better about yourself.
Oh, that's powerful. I did one of my sabbaticals, and I was in Arizona. I actually went in a month where it was way too hot to go outside in the afternoon. I'd been there before, but in the words that came to me as I journaled and prayed was, you can serve the world without trying to save it. Because somewhere when I was young, it was like, you got to show up and it's Superman's cape. You're always good. You always have the solution. You're fixing it all. You have no needs. But when you're serving people, it's a different posture than trying to save them. And so I think I love the visual when you were like, that was almost a weight off you. Mm-hmm. And there's a little bit of fear in like, what if I show up fully and they say no? What's the worst that can happen? So yeah, there's probably a whole episode on unpacking that there, but man, I appreciate you. And, I look up to you. I think you've done it and you've exited it and you've kind of listened to your passion and, took a risk. So, thank you for writing the book. Thanks for being on today. And, I know you come to Nashville once in a while. So next time you're around, we'll hang out.
I love that. Sten, thanks for having me. I love your energy. And, I just think you're adding so much value in the world, man. It's great to be with you today. Thank you for that.
Thanks, bro. We'll talk soon.